Ed Isaacson with NBADraftBlog.com, at NBADraftBlog on Twitter. A great follow, especially this time of year. Ed, thank you so much for coming on this Monday morning and spending some time with us here on The Morning Drive.
Oh, absolutely. My pleasure.
This has got to be right in your wheelhouse. It's it's a ton of work. People have no idea all of the trails you chase down and a lot of the people you look at, as with this time of year, there's so much out there. In the last decade, the information flow is mind-boggling, and your job maybe 10 years ago was challenging and difficult. And how would you characterize, what's happened in your industry over the last decade? I mean, there's so much out there.
With the technology now, just from the simple things like being able to find games on, a dozen different networks on it, on a Saturday or Sunday, to having games on every night of the week, to having platforms like, Synergy Sports, where with a couple of clicks of your mouse, you're bringing up all the clips of any player you want. You can just sit there and watch all day long, which makes it much easier. But there is something still to be said of the old way of just getting out there and watching guys and getting to practices and, sort of following, especially a lot of the top prospects, from when they're 14, 15 years old, and being able to, watch how they grow. Because in a lot of ways, most people are really seeing these guys when they get to college as freshmen. But there's a lot of history for many of these top names. When you look at these Ben Simmons and Brandon Ingram types, that you can really sort of track their development over a couple of years already. It's really not just, the 30 games or so they played the 1 year. There's a library of, their high school games you can watch, talking to their old coaches. So it really is just at times an overload of information,
right.
but the job is to sort it out.
Yeah. Has this process with the overflow, as you discuss the endless amount of real time video, there's video to evaluate, there's stats, there's all that, plus the psychological, doesn't make for bust proof drafts. I mean, it's still in many ways a roll of the dice with, what team and what program you move into and what your work ethic is like and all those kinds of things that translate, take a good player and make him great in the NBA or a great player and make him sort of pedestrian with better competition. It's not bust proof, is it?
No. And 'cause the one thing we can't account for as we do all this is, one of the biggest factors that's going to affect a player, especially early in his career, is where he ends up, what NBA team he goes to, even if he starts in the NBA. A lot of guys will handle it differently. Some will get more playing time than others. So a lot of the guys were even labeled as busts. Sometimes it's not even because they weren't good or they weren't putting in the effort. It just was the wrong place for them to play, the wrong coach, the wrong system. And you see it over the years. As guys start to move around a bit, a lot of them do find their home. And that's when they start to grow a bit. We're looking at the playoffs now with Bismack Biyombo.
Yeah.
A couple of years in Charlotte, and there wasn't much there. Goes to Toronto, takes on a bit of a different role than what he was used to. And it's working perfectly for him right now.
Ed Isaacson with NBADraftBlog.com, at NBADraftBlog on Twitter. Interesting. In researching this, I open up, and you guys have the Jazz taking Demetrius Jackson, the point guard from Notre Dame. Curious, because I hadn't seen that name associated with the Jazz in many other of the mocks.
Well, I think that may be someone else's mock who's involved in the overall site. My mock is actually over on with NBC Sports, and I have Denzel Valentine.
Yeah, that's one of the names. We can start there, with Denzel, because there are a couple other names I want to run by you. And I mean, I imagine the obvious attraction is a four-year guy, played for Izzo. You know he can defend. He's got length, which Dennis Lindsay's always looking for that extra, defensive angle, and length is there. An improved shooter, getting better there, would seem like a good fit for this team.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned a lot of the key points to Valentine is he could shoot the ball. You can play him at the one or the two. He has great vision, is a very good passer. Not saying you're going to play him at the point exclusively, but you can run some pick-and-roll sets for him out of the shooting guard spot, and he's going to find guys. With all these old guys, they come in knowing how to defend. And, no one's going to mistake Denzel Valentine for a tremendous athlete. But he knows how to play defense. And in a lot of ways, that's more important than a lot of the physical things that, are sort of the obsession now, like wingspan and being able to jump. He knows how to play.
Right.
And I think he's the kind of guy that, Quinn Snyder's going to feel comfortable putting him out there and getting minutes out of him. And the versatility helps.
Yeah. Well, you said a mouthful, knowing how to play. That covers hours and hours of breakdown at the end when you sum it up. Yeah, he knows how to play, and that would be a great fit for this team rather than maybe, like a Malachi Richardson who has a different skill set, but he's new to the whole, to the next level competition. So there's certain intangibles, maybe boxes that Valentine checks that, say, a guy like Richardson, not yet, because there's just not a sample, so not enough years watching him play at that level.
Richardson is an interesting case because he had, a decent freshman year, but played a couple of good, straight good games in the tournament against some good teams, and all of a sudden he was the next obsession. Right. But like you mentioned, he hasn't had the experience. And you always have the issue you have with Syracuse players when it comes to defense. He spent his time in the zone. He has long arms, and he's a good athlete. But the opposite we mentioned with Valentine, we're not really sure if Richardson knows how to play defense at this point. And that's going to start to come out more when he's working out for the individual team. So be able to get a better sense of where he is, really.
Yeah, and I mean, the attraction to me is the guy can fill it up and can score, and at 6'7 or 6'6 with a 7-foot wingspan, and he can, he leaps, and he's obviously his workouts and the draft combine, everything. I mean, he's on the way up. Valentine, a little bit safer pick maybe, that I'm wondering if you think like a Malachi might be a home run, or maybe a guy who doesn't stick around that long if he doesn't graduate, in a sense.
I guess you sort of have to look at where the roster is right now and what the hopes are for the next, year or two. If there's sort of an urgency to get into the playoffs, then, Valentine is probably more that guy because he's going to bring you something fairly quick. Richardson, on the other hand, you don't know, but in a lot of ways, people felt the same way about Rodney Hood.
Yes,
when he was coming out, between the time at Mississippi State and being a second banana to Jabari Parker at Duke. But once he got into his comfort zone, we saw the results this past year. The kid can play.
Yeah,
and if you can take that time with someone like Richardson. The payoff could be a lot bigger down the road than Valentine, but there's as much of a chance that's not going to pan out.
Yeah, that's good stuff. We're with Ed Isaacson drilling down on the upcoming NBA draft. He's with NBADraftBlog.com. A great follow, especially during these times, on Twitter, at NBADraftBlog. And so the next box, and I'm not going, this is just in no order. I'm just looking at the guys most commonly associated with the Jazz at 12, and there's no certainty that they're going to be there at 12. They may move. They may move down. Who knows what Dennis Lindsay's going to do. He's indicated maybe being more aggressive this year. He's got all kinds of assets, the draft picks. They have money to work with. So now I'm on to this kid from Turkey, the long and lean Furkan Korkmaz. I don't want to label him a project because that has some negative connotations, but from what you know of him, how far away is he from contributing on an NBA roster soon? Because I think, you know, while the Jazz are okay with developing, and they've historically had great coaching staffs who put in the time to take good players and make them great, but I think now they, you know, they feel like, you know, their future is kind of right now, or at least in the next year or two.
I don't think he's as far away as a lot of the European players who do come in, but I certainly wouldn't label him as ready to step in and make any kind of real impact. And I think the general thinking on him is any team that picks him would probably leave him overseas, because he's so, you know, even from an overseas perspective, he's still sort of working his way up through the levels over there. So unless there's something extremely unique, like we saw with Giannis Antetokounmpo, which is the freak athlete with the long arms, a guy like Korkmaz, it's probably better for him to sort of let him get his bearings still at the European level and develop his game over there, because he's still just 18 years old.
Right.
And besides coming to a new country and, a faster, more physical style of play, for a lot of guys, it could be overwhelming. So I'm not, if they do go that direction, I'm not sure if he's someone they would look to bring over immediately.
Interesting. I want to ask you about another local kid who chances are won't be there. His people don't think that Jakob Poeltl, the Utes center, will be there at 12 if the Jazz are still picking at 12 and haven't made a move one way or the other. And I know he's sort of a dinosaur, and we say that, you know, with a smile and with all due respect, because the kid's immensely talented, especially defensively, and is solid and a really good passer. But he's a back-to-the-basket, low-block big in this day and age of, you know, going small. And, of course, you've seen what Oklahoma City's doing with going big.
He's interesting. But I think there's a bit more to him than the back-to-the-basket game, which, as you mentioned, Oklahoma City and some other teams.
Yep.
Use it effectively in the right places, but he's also tremendous in the pick and roll.
Yes,
which in today's NBA is almost necessary to have big guys who can run that effectively and do it smoothly. And while not a great athlete like a lot of these guys, he understands how to play it. He understands the spacing. And when, you add him to a group that has some quality shooters on the perimeter, all of a sudden, whether, he's getting the points or not, there are a lot more open looks on the floor. And I think that's where he brings more value on the offensive end than any other single thing he does.
Yeah.
And like you mentioned, the defensive end, he knows what to do there. And I think he'll hold his own fairly well after a couple of years in the NBA.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And that's great insight on Jakob, because you articulated something that I've seen in his game, that, the sum are greater than the individual parts. And you mentioned pick and roll. He's such a good passer. And I thought during the season passed well to a fault. I thought that maybe they needed him to be a little bit more assertive, and that'll come across at the next level when he's told to be more assertive. But you mentioned pick and roll, and that would to me indicate that there would be sort of presupposed that he would have to be more aggressive offensively. Are you sensing that maybe Poeltl could do with a little bit more, being a little more selfish, even though he's a great passer and a great teammate?
Yeah, Yeah, and I think that's a problem for a lot of guys,
right,
at, you know, at his age coming out of college. They go to one of either extreme. They're extremely selfish, or you know, they're unselfish to a fault. But you know, college can be tough on big guys because, you know, I mentioned the spacing with the pick and roll. It's just not there,
right,
in a lot of college programs. So there wasn't a lot of room for him to work with to the best of his abilities. And yeah, I think he did, you know, I think at times he did want to try and show that there was more to him, you know, more to his game than just being a big guy who can get in the low post. But I think once he sees the spacing and the shots that now will be available,
right,
to him, I don't think it will be tough for him to make that transition.
Is your sense that Jakob Poeltl won't be there at 12? I mean, not that he would be sliding to 12, but I get a sense that somebody earlier is going to take advantage of that, and he won't be there.
Yeah, I'm not sure if anyone before them will take him, but I think I don't see him getting past Milwaukee at 10.
Right.
You know, the Greg Monroe experiment didn't really gel for them last year. They still have another year of him, I believe. So it's sort of a great opportunity for them to bring in Poeltl and, you know, let him be able to sort of get his bearings for a year and work on his body and do all those, you know, all the little things that once a season starts, it's sort of tough,
right,
to do. So I think that would be a great fit for him. And I think, you know, my guess would be that's the latest he goes.
All right. Well, we'll certainly keep an eye on that. Another couple of quick questions before we let Ed Isaacson go. Kyle Collinsworth working out for the Bucks today. There's a guy who, you know, the BYU's guy, no secret, led the, you know, has the all-time record for double-doubles, which blows my mind that the record is 6 and he's got 12. But seems to be, you know, probably not going to be one of the top 60 guys drafted. What's his upside, and do you think he's got a spot in the NBA? I mean, I realize, you know, the further you go down in these, you know, these players and the roster spots, it's a little bit more of a crapshoot. But what's your overall assessment of Kyle Collinsworth?
We've seen with the triple doubles, he can get to, you know, his great size for the point guard position. Can get to the basket, sees the floor. We talked about spacing. He understands spacing very well.
Mm-hmm.
But there's sort of two things that will, you know, sort of affect him, at least from a draft point of view. One, who is he going to defend at
right.
the NBA level? You know, I think
That's
he got a couple
point.
Of steals per game last year, but that was sort of the way BYU's defense worked. It wasn't really him locking down on guys. He's not going to defend NBA point guards. I'm not sure he can defend NBA shooting guards.
Right.
The other thing is he's going to be 25 by the time the next NBA season starts. And while I'm not a big proponent on, you know, age being a major factor, I think, you know, a lot of teams will have trouble, you know, using a pick, even a second rounder, on someone who, you know, is 24 now, by the time next season starts, 25.
Right.
When you can, you know, bring it, you know, it plays summer league, gets in the training camp, and see where he really is at that point.
Yeah. No, it's a bit of a long shot, and I know that there's some shooting issues too. A guy with the ball in his hands that much, he's got to be able to hit shots, and there was that question mark at BYU where pretty much everybody shot it well. Let me ask you this, because I know you're not only drilling down on the draft, but you're an NBA guy. I mean, before I let you go, what's your sense of, is there something wrong with the Warriors? Is this just OKC playing better than maybe anybody right now?
No, if there's one area where the Warriors just look completely out of sync is their defense.
Right.
That's the point that was most concerning to me last night was, the amount of blown coverage. Oklahoma City was not only hitting shots, but they were just getting open shots.
Right.
You can't take anything away from Oklahoma City. Adams has stepped his play up, which has helped them tremendously. Westbrook is Westbrook. Kevin Durant, has his great moments, and when he gets going, there's no one on the Warriors who's really going to be able to lock him down.
Right.
So it's the defense, and, you know, I know it's unpopular because everyone loves him, but Draymond Green, you know, is his own worst enemy at this point. You know, it sort of looks, you know, his frantic energy works to his advantage sometimes, but then he gets out of control.
Yep.
You know, not even talking about the kick, but just, you know, the way he's moving around the floor. And yep. In the end, it hurts the whole team.
Yeah. No, I see that too. That all of his gesticulations and emotions is good. And, you know, you love that and you love all the things that he brings. But if it's not going well, you know, like you said, he just creates a little bit more negative energy around him. And, you know, maybe that bleeds over. I was saying during the Portland series, they were giving up 114 points a game to the Blazers. Now, that's a good young team, but they're not known for lighting it up. And, wow, now, I mean, OKC had 117 points after three last night.
Yeah, and, you know, I think, you know, the Golden State players, you know, their offensive rhythm sort of benefits a lot from that up and down pace, mm-hmm. where they're not getting set, you know, getting back and set on defense. But what they're lacking is sort of, you know, that real big man who can, you know, can take away some of these open layups in transition that, you know, no, I mean, there's no one in the league who's stopping Russell Westbrook coast to coast once he gets moving. But you have to at least make it a little bit harder on him. And, you know, this is, you know, in terms of personnel matchup, you know, Oklahoma City is more than glad to go running with them.
Right. Well, it's certainly taken an interesting turn. Game four, as we talked about, is going to be, you know, probably the pivot of the series. We'll see what happens. But you have bigger fish to fry coming up later on in June, and we'll be following Ed Isaacson, NBADraftBlog.com, on Twitter, at NBADraftBlog. Ed, thank you so much for the tour de force of local interest in the draft, and keep up the good work. We're following you. Thank you.
Thank you. It's great talking to you.